Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to take a look at how to lessen your risk of breast cancer. New studies from the University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. We're also going to look at what we can do if we want to be healthier on a gluten-free diet, University of Minnesota, and a lot more on health and healing, including how to get rid of kidney stones. What can you drink to do that? We'll share that with you. Then we have some interesting audio clips I found. I am not a fan of Winston Churchill. He had a few brilliant moments and an awful lot of destructive ones. Unfortunately, he is viewed as the most respected person in British history. The truth is, he's a genocidalist. He has to take his place with Pol Pot. Actually, he exceeded Pol Pot and right up there with Hitler. Think that's too harsh? Just look at the evidence. And we will. Also, there's a lot going on now about the children. And this is really it's not just unfortunate, but it shows how we politicized a problem instead of looking at a more humanistic and spiritual way of resolving it. But everyone's placing the blame solely upon Trump and the people around him. This, unfortunately, is not the truth. Trump is an ignoramus. He should never be president of anything. But he didn't start this. And individually, he can't stop it. This is Congress's doing. But go back, and we will, to who actually wrote the laws that created this mess. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, yes. Why then aren't we willing to look at the genesis of this problem, understand it, and then resolve it humanely, fairly? I'll discuss that. Also, once again, count upon the United States to never do the right thing, ever. We're just incapable at this point in our time and history with our leadership. I blame everybody in Congress and the government agencies. They're all fully capable of making proper choices. They're highly educated. They're intelligent. But they're extremely manipulative and self-serving. So why are they deciding to refund the white helmets where they had suspended payment when there is compelling evidence that they're a terrorist organization, they're a major propagandist, and hundreds of millions of dollars were given to them, and that went to support terrorism? We'll play you two segments, one about their reintroduction of their payments and how they justified it, and then showing you why the white helmets are a terrorist organization, and Democracy and others who, and it's their right, their freedom to bring on anyone they want and not do your homework, and, you know, that's fine. But we believe in doing some background checks before we promote someone. And we have. By the way, for those of you who are not always able to be at a computer to listen over the internet or a land-based station to listen at this noon to one, Monday to Friday, Eastern Standard Time, let me give you two numbers. Please write them down. You never know when you're going to be someplace and like to hear it live or download an archive. And you think, what were those numbers? I forgot. Write them down. Listening live, 424-203-8046. 424-203-8046. But the vast majority of people listening listen on the archives at their convenience, generally in the evening. That number is 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. A lot of people develop kidney stones. In fact, the pain of passing a kidney stone has been described as on par with natural childbirth. However, urologists are increasingly prescribing an accessible natural remedy for kidney stones. Lemonade. That's right. Kidney stones can be avoided by drinking lemonade. How so? Because citric acid-rich lemon juice is the form of lemonade, in the form of lemonade, is proven highly effective in preventing kidney stones or slowing their formation. And medical professionals, including a director of the University of California, San Diego Comprehensive Kidney Stone Center, and a professor of urology at the University of Wisconsin, Madison, advocate lemonade therapy as an alternative to taking medications or supplements for the painful condition. Therapy for kidney stones, lemon juice. Why? Very high in citric acid. And it's extremely painful in the flank and the lower back. Abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, blood in the urine are also symptoms of kidney stones. In addition, it's important to note the presence of a fever indicates the likely blood infection, which can be life-threatening. So do you remember how many times I've suggested that in the morning you start your day, first thing you should do is always brush your teeth, take a tongue cleaner, and gently move from the back of the mouth to the front, scraping out all the bacteria that have accumulated on the tongue, including the sulfur bacteria that creates the bad breath. Then mouthwash. Now you're ready, because if you just get up and go drink something, all the bacteria in your mouth is going to go right into your system. So then have yourself a little juice. Now, if you're going to go exercise, which I hope you are, let's start with 8 ounces of beet juice, organic beet juice. Add into that 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, and 1 teaspoon of ginger juice. That will be so good for deacidifying your tissue, alkalizing your digestive system. So it can also help prevent kidney stones. Also, I read an article in the Natural Blaze yesterday. Good publication, by the way. They're good people over there. About colloidal silver. Colloidal, C-O-L-L-O-I-D-A-L. It's most known for its antimicrobial properties. But there are many other uses for colloidal silver. And it doesn't hurt if you have a dog or cat to put a few drops, that's all, not teaspoon, drops out of an eyedropper, a few drops in their water bowl. It does a lot of good. It can kill over 500 pathogens and help keep them healthy, especially if they're susceptible to parasites and bacteria. And by the way, I was posting some interesting videos of animals. I think it's fun to watch animals. And yes, I posted one of baby gorilla and its mother after birth kissing it. And it was no different than what a human mother would do for a baby. And then I saw where someone sent me a hospital bill, not me personally, but sent it for me to review, of pregnancy. And it was like $16,000. This was not cesarean section either. And there was a little fee in there, $200, I believe, to hold the baby. It was hard for me to read. It was either $20 or $200, because it was very weak print. But I thought, they're charging you now in a hospital to hold your baby? Yeah, they'll charge you for everything. So anyhow, I always like to give people something to feel good about and be on an up mood. And watching baby elephants and how they play and love people, and how all the other elephants, where they're at, are always watching them. One of them fell down a little embankment, something like 15 elephants went over and grabbed her and pushed her right up over. You see how ingenious they are. They're always watching. And then one of the most interesting was there was an elephant holding a lion cub in its snout, curl up at the end, and walking 2 miles to a water hole with a mother lion just calmly walking beside the elephant. So that was one of the rarest things I've ever seen in my life, because these are not compatible in nature, and yet there was the elephant helping the baby and helping the lion, and the lion saying okay. I think it's fun to see these kind of things. In any case, I was thinking about lions, that in the wild, a lioness can live 10 to 12 years, sometimes just a little longer because they work in a pride. Lions have shorter lives because when they're finally overtaken by a younger one and have to leave the pride, they can't hunt. They're not fast. All they can do is scavenge. And generally, they're attacked and killed and eaten by hyenas. But in captivity, up in Orlando where they have the safari areas, they can live 25 years or longer. Why? Two key points. Number one, without question, is clean water. Because there is no such thing as clean water in Africa. All water is polluted in Africa. Unless you're right under a waterfall coming out of a mountain from an underground reservoir. But that's not the case. And so the parasites in the water destroy the liver, and when the liver goes, the animal goes. So I cannot overstate enough how important it is for you to drink clean, healthy water, and that doesn't mean the water out of your tap. But colloidal silver is also good if you feel that you have drank something that was unhealthy. Just about 10 drops, nothing more. You know, this was published in the Science of Translational Medicine about colloidal silver and its antimicrobial properties and how handy it is if we come into contact with anything that is bacteria, especially gram-negative bacteria, which have a protective outer coating that often is impenetrable to antibiotics made of larger molecules. However, when combined with colloidal silver, these antibiotic drugs can kill between 10 to 1,000 times as many bacteria. Something to think about. And very good as antifungal for candida, respiratory complaints like asthma and COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is a killer disease. In fact, COPD is the third leading cause of death in the United States. Did you know that? And inhaling steroids is the most common treatment for such complaints, but they don't cure asthma or COPD. They simply make it easier to breathe by cutting down on swelling and inflammation and mucus buildup in the lungs and airways. But then you can get the same results with colloidal silver and quinton water, Q-U-I-N-T-O-N. When these two ingredients are put together in a nebulizer, an air compressor, also known as a breathing machine, the device turns the liquids into a mist so they can be inhaled easily. Just there's so much that within orthodoxy people are not getting. Eye infections, pink eye, colloidal silver is very simple to use in the eyes. You simply drop it in the eye drops about three times a day, generally about two drops. And then viral infections, especially colds and flus. Colloidal silver in the cooler months can boost the immune system. You don't need to take it every day and shouldn't, but it's powerful and it works. Gut microbes can contribute to depression and anxiety if you're overweight, according to the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. What's this mean? Like everyone, people with type 2 diabetes and obesity suffer from depression and anxiety, but even more so. And researchers at the Joslin, that's J-O-S-L-I-N, Diabetes Center, now have demonstrated a surprising potential contributor to these negative feelings, gut microbiome. And so that's what they have determined. Now let's go back to what I've been saying for a long time, that is, good bacteria coming from good probiotics, fermented foods, sauerkraut, miso, tempeh, tofu. A lot of herbal teas now, most have some form of probiotic. That helps produce good bacteria. Good bacteria helps produce good emotions. Sugars, alcohol, caffeine, meats, putrefying foods, these create bad bacteria. And bad bacteria are what leads to depression, anxiety, and disease. It's that simple. Also, now they've looked at turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, and they say now, something new, that it can save the aging brain from dementia and premature death. One of the best sites out there is Green Med Info. The Sayer G does a lot of good work. Presently, there is no orthodox or science-based medicine approach to dementia or Alzheimer's, unless it's pharmaceutical. And it doesn't really do a whole lot. It doesn't reverse it. But a new study on turmeric extract indicates that a natural curative agent already exists and is close to everyday consumer in the spice rack. A promising study published in Cider Physiology and Biochemistry entitled Dietary Curcumin Ameliorates Aging-Related Cerebrovascular Dysfunction Through AMPK Uncoupling Protein 2 Pathway, end quote. This is the kind of reading that I've done my whole life, but Marty Feldman and I, just a little human interest story. Marty would frequently come to the Runners Club on Sunday mornings. We've been having that since 1975. And I'll be joining him again in a few weeks when I get back to New York. We just finished Friday principal filming. Wow. 6 hours we filmed. This guy that we filmed was phenomenal. I mean, he was so good. More about that when we get ready to present the feature film. In any case, I go to the park, and Marty would have a few people who were very slow, but they went around the park and then get some juice and then come back later around 1 o'clock and with a whole stack. Marty would come with two shopping bags, one in each hand, up to the apartment, and he'd give me his shopping bag and he'd take one, we'd sit there and we'd read, and any interesting articles, we'd highlight them, discuss them, and then go out for lunch, come back, and keep reading. And by the early evening, before we take a break and walk down to Lincoln Center and see an art film, we probably had read, I don't know, quick reading, probably 100 articles. That was fun. If you're a geek, that's what you do. That's what Marty was. Smart man. Number one in his class at Yale Medical School. In any case, when you read a title of an article for the average person, you think, wow, what's that mean? What it means is that, I'll put this in lay language, age-related cerebrovascular dysfunction is occurring on a pandemic scale in the United States. That would include stroke and cerebral amyloid angiopathy and cognitive decline and neurodegenerative diseases. And presently, there's just nothing that conventional medical interventions are capable of providing as solutions. None have been found to reverse underlying pathologies in conditions whose trajectories are generally characterized as incurable. And all the more reason why the new study holds so much promise in providing an evidence-based, mind you, I said evidence-based, not scientific-based. Scientific-based, so you know the difference. Scientific-based is about what is 95% of all medical practice in the United States, nursing practice in the United States, and dentistry practice in the United States, and 100% of psychiatry practice in the United States. That's what it is. It's hyper. It's ultra, ultra conservative on steroids. You can't talk to it. You can't. There's no open minds. There's no accountability. They want to be rewarded for their effort without ever looking at the results. If you're an oncologist and every one of your patients died, you still have a happy day. You go vacationing. You get your money, lots of it. That's science-based medicine. You can't change it. evidence-based medicines is that if you find something doesn't work, you change it. You're open to new ideas. Someone comes in who's got something from Ayurvedic disciplines, and you're open to it. You say, friend, show me what you've got, and then if I find that I can duplicate your work and get the same results as you're claiming, the evidence is there for me to support it. That's the difference, a tremendous difference, the difference between an ultra-Orthodox Republican and a progressive. That's how radically different the two pages of medicine are. Or put it another way, all of your complementary and holistic doctors and scientists are evidence-based. All of your don't tell me anything, I know everything, you're stupid, I'm smart, that's science-based medicine. It bridles with narcissism. In any case, they've never been able to do anything to correct this. So here's a study, I think it was 24 months, and they used for 1 month, they used curcumin. That's the active ingredient in turmeric. And here's what the study says, quote, the researchers observed, quote, remarkable restoration. Let me repeat that. Remarkable restoration of the impaired cerebrovascular endothelium, dependent vascular relaxation, i.e. that means the ability of the blood vessels to naturally relax in this rat model. And this was important. So, curcumin for everyone who wants to preserve your brain. It's anti-inflammatory, it's antioxidative, it's anti-cytotoxic, it's teratogenic. So it does all these wonderful things. It's neurorestorative. It's metal chelating. Now, that's not the only thing. I would also suggest, for those of you who care about your brain, coconut oil. A lot of people don't know the science behind it. If you did, then you would say, if you're sick, approximately 66% medium-chain triglycerides, and you're capable of improving symptoms of cognitive decline in those suffering from dementia by increasing your brain-boosting ketone bodies, and perhaps more remarkably, within only one dose, and generally within 2 hours, and cacao. In fact, a study in 2009 found that cacao, which is chocolate, and the proanthocyanidins can protect against lipid peroxidation associated with neuronal cell death in a number of relevant Alzheimer's conditions. Sage the herb extract has therapeutic value in patients with mild to moderate Alzheimer's. Folic acid, which is a part of the B complex, is very important for the brain in reducing homocysteine modulated problems. Resveratrol, R-E-S, Vera, V-E-R-A, Troll, three syllables, T-R-O-L. This compound is mainly found in grapes, but it's also in peanuts and chocolate. There are at least 16 articles on just our website from peer-reviewed literature showing anti-arthritic properties. Ginkgo biloba, one of the few herbs proven to be at least as effective as pharmaceutical drugs in treating and improving symptoms of Alzheimer's. And also Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, officinatus, that herb is also known as lemon balm, B-A-L-M, has been found to have therapeutic effects in patients with mild to moderate Alzheimer's. And saffron, S-A-F-F-R-O-N, that's very good. In fact, it compares favorably to a drug, dompenzil, in the treatment of mild to moderate Alzheimer's. And then curcumin, and that's the top one. So we are 25 minutes into our program. Lots of information, always to empower, always positive. As we enter in now the second part of our program, we're going to take a break and come back. Please stay with us.
Still strong, ooh, baby. Got a sign, sealed, delivered.
And from our environmental segment, this is from The Guardian. Flooding from sea level rise threatens over 300,000 U.S. coastal homes, this study says. Quote, climate change study predicts staggering impact of swelling oceans on coastal communities within now to the next 30 years. So we're not looking now 200 years or 100 years. We're looking in the near future because it's already happening. And they're looking at substantial increases because we're now in a state, and I'll deal with this tomorrow, where the Antarctic and Arctic are melting at such a rapid rate that massive amounts of fresh water are going into the ocean, far beyond any mathematical model had predicted. I told you about this 10 years ago. I said, what if the mathematical models are wrong? What if we're in absolute chaos theory where feedback loops that cannot be stopped suddenly accelerate to a tremendous level? It's happening now. Trouble is, it's happening in Antarctic or Arctic, in the Himalayas, where seven major rivers get their water. It's happening in the Andes, where glaciers are melting that provide water for people below. And because these are very sparsely populated, nobody pays attention. We should, and we'll keep you in the loop to show you the most vulnerable places and the most likely to be able to live a quality of life. But most people are not going to do a thing. That's unfortunate. I'm going to go in a moment to this little clip. It's only 2 minutes long, to show you why didn't we pay attention or why we were not outraged when millions upon millions of people were exported, families torn apart, children detained. The centers you see now, these were built by Obama. And Clinton had centers even before that built. Why no one's looking back to see that this is a problem that should have been dealt with a long time ago. In fact, let's play that right now.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws.
Even as we are a nation of immigrants, we're also a nation of laws. Undocumented workers broke our immigration laws, and I believe that they must be held accountable, especially those who may be dangerous. When I took office, I committed to fixing this broken immigration system. And I began by doing what I could to secure our borders. But today, our immigration system is broken. And everybody knows it. There are actions I have the legal authority to take as president. Tonight, I'm announcing those actions. We'll build on our progress at the border with additional resources for our law enforcement personnel so that they can stem the flow of illegal crossings and speed the return of those who do cross over. If you're a criminal, you'll be deported. If you plan to enter the U.S. illegally, your chances of getting caught and sent back just went up. We expect people who live in this country to play by the rules. We expect that those who cut the line will not be unfairly rewarded. The actions I'm taking are not only lawful, they're the kinds of actions taken by every single Republican president and every single Democratic president for the past half century. And to those members of Congress who question my authority to make our immigration system work better, question my authority, or question the wisdom of me acting where Congress has failed, I have one answer. Pass a bill.
Actually, the bill was passed in 1993. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton. So why is it that we're not looking at the fact that Democrats and Republicans are all responsible for this? Nobody wanted to really deal with it. Congress did not want to deal with it. And they've been using it now in the most cynical manner, and that is to show that they are for the immigrants and therefore vote for us. It is so transparent how corrupt the Democrats and Republicans, current and past, are. The President of the United States does not have the authority by himself or herself to unilaterally say, open borders. That's one of the reasons you don't want that. If you have that, you have a dictator. You don't have a president. And already we have a duopoly. We don't have a constitutional republic. The House creates the bills. The Senate then passes them. The president signs them. They can write new rules. And they can give amnesty. They can create humane environments for people to transition from environments that we created. And why don't we have the courage or the honesty as a nation to have a dialogue on, let's go down to Nicaragua, San Salvador, Honduras. How did these places become so inhospitable to just normal people living there? Why do they want to move from there? Well, we created that. The dictators, the military juntas, we created that, supported it, enabled it. Henry Kissinger and all the other secretaries of state. Just like right now, because of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, we created one of the worst disasters in all of Africa, in Libya. Went from number one to right down to where they're a basket case. We did that. No one takes responsibility. That's unfortunate. So I just want to let you know, that's why I played the clip, that for those who want to say this is all happening today, no, this has been a problem that no one has dealt with honestly and should have. More on upcoming programs. I'm going to bring in some people, some philosophers and people and ethicists who will show you how we can deal with this where it does not destroy America, but rather helps people who want to be assimilated into our culture. And there's ways of doing it where you do it wisely. But right now, I mean, if I were a member of a family that survived the concentration camps, I would be deeply offended by them saying the word concentration camp, by showing photographs, and they have it up on the web where there's a photograph of children in a concentration camp and then a photograph of these children kept in Walmarts in an enclosed, caged environment. Inhumane, yes. Insensitive to the needs of the child and the trauma that it can cause, absolutely. But if they were coming seeking political asylum, are they going to the entry points that allow them to come and seek asylum where the child is not separated? Remember, entering America is illegally, first time, is a misdemeanor. Going back and coming back in is a felony. So there's proper ways of doing this and there's improper ways. And we're doing it improperly. But now imagine this. What if you took a look and say, yeah, it's concentration camp. Then I'm going to have to share a history lesson with you about what went on in concentration camps, as I have in the past. And the conditions, no children were ever going to a concentration camp, were supposed to come out. A few did. 98% died. They were starved to death. They were brutalized. If they could work at all, if they had any capacity to work, they would work until they died. They were beaten, they were shot, they were sexually abused. Everything that could be done against a child was done, and with their parents also. That was real genocide. Do not make the mistake of comparing what is going on now with the real suffering of all those who lost their lives, the young and the innocent. And because that's a wrong comparison to make, and that is abusing the pain and suffering of millions of Jews, Gypsies, and others who suffered in the concentration camps to these detention centers, which are inhumane. But you don't see gas chambers. You don't see children being shot. You don't see children being starved to death. You don't see the electrical wires. Will children go and fall on the electrical wire knowing they're going to kill themselves? You can play that game with everyone else in the liberal community. You cannot play that game with me, because it dishonors those children. And I expect the Jews in this audience to be equally as outraged as I am at the Clinton and other factors playing everything they can because they despise this president. Despise the president all you want. He's easy to despise. But then what are you going to do to make America a better country? What exactly have you done? All of you clowns in Washington, D.C., and I call you a clown because you're not doing anything of substance. You have not repealed Glass-Steagall. You have not repealed Citizens United. You have not put in place universal health care. You have not demilitarized. You're still paying $10,000 for toilet seat cover, just a cover of a toilet seat in airplanes, and trying to justify it. You've already spent over $1 trillion on a C-35 plane that we didn't need, just because it benefits the legislators getting re-voted in by saying, I brought jobs to my state. You have militarized the police. You have recreated, even though it was overruled by the, it was closed down by the Supreme Court from the mid-1930s until today, debtors' prisons. Debtors' prisons are thriving. You haven't said a word. You haven't said a word, not a word, not a piece of legislation to stop payday loans and 1,000% interest if you default. You haven't done a thing to help students. You haven't done a thing to ghettoize any city in the United States. You haven't done a thing to feed the 16 million hungry children. How can you, on the one hand, condemn the conditions in a caged environment that children should not be in and are, at least temporarily, supposed to be 20 days by law, at the same time allow 16 million American children to live in perpetuity malnourished and food insecure? And I could go on. You're just fools. You're playing every card you can except anything that actually improves any condition in the human condition. And you have caused all this. Why don't all the people involved in supporting Hillary Clinton, why don't all of you take your next vacation to Libya? Spend a week there. Then come back and tell me how we need her in office, or Bernie Sanders, who's no better. I'll get with Bernie tomorrow on a special commentary of how he sold out. The people who trusted him didn't think so. He did. Just some thoughts. Now we're going to go over to Elizabeth, who's standing by. Hi, Elizabeth. I'm on a short leash here on time today, so just give us one question.
Okay, this comes from Sarah. She was listening last week when you had a woman on who had worked with you at the Institute of Applied Biology, and she said she found it fascinating to learn of how you'd taken on 10 terminally ill cancer patients that were in hospice care, and of those, 7 had their cancer reversed. When she told her mother, who's a physician, her mother responded with, how would that be possible? If someone had reversed cancer for 70% of terminally ill patients in hospice care, it would definitely be making the news. Well, she'd been looking at other areas of similar work with the same remarkable recoveries, and they don't make the news. And her question is, why is it that these things just don't make news?
Okay, well, first of all, the backstory. If you could turn down her mic there, because there's feedback in my ear. Thank you. It's not going to ever make news, anything I do, unless there's a gaffe or something goes wrong. But otherwise, all of the hundreds of thousands, if not tens of millions of people who have gained, learned, benefited, made changes, either through being motivated, that their story will never be told. I remember a reporter for the New York Post came to the Roosevelt Hotel in the Grand Ballroom where I was about to do a talk. She introduced herself, and I said, here are people, if you want to know if any of the stuff I'm sharing works, here are people you can ask. So I get up and I ask, before I did my talk, I said, how many people in this room have reversed diabetes from following protocols that I give? Hands went up. How many people in this room are nurses or physicians? All these hands went up. How many people in here have reversed or know someone in their family following protocols? And all these hands went up. I said, well, you just got 3,000 people here. At least 1,000 people have changed. Why don't you speak with them? She wouldn't speak with one person. She spoke with Stephen Barrett, but wouldn't speak with any of these people. Now you see the game. At the Institute, for 10 years, I couldn't get anyone interested in the fact that nutrition played a role in health at all, nor any other doctor in America who was a member of the AMA. They just didn't see it. It was pharmaceuticals, pharmaceuticals, pharmaceuticals. When I did a study and showed that over 16 months I was able to reverse, completely reverse, all AIDS-defining illnesses in advanced AIDS cases, 12 of them, of which 8 completed the whole 16 months, all of those appeared on Tony Brown's journal over a period of like 5 years. And I held a press conference, and I sent out 7,000 invitations to the press, 7,000, 3 times. I hired, and I remember I paid, I think it was $10,000 to a PR firm just to invite all the press. And around the country came 100 people, their physicians, their medical records, to show using natural non-toxic therapies you could reverse AIDS-defining illnesses and HIV. We had a panel, including David Patterson, the governor of New York, and an esteemed panel of scientists who had reviewed all their cases. This took a year. Not a single member of the media showed up. No one did. Not a person. Now, you can see photographs of this. You can hear the audio. I have all this together. It was called AIDS is Not a Death Sentence. We'd reversed it. I had treated 1,200 people with AIDS-defining illness. Not one died during all those years at the Institute. At the Tri-State Healing Center. So why is it? Well, because you're not supposed to have this happen. And a person's negative expectation directly impacts their reality. So if you've been told over and over again, when they're in hospice care, it's the end, there's nothing more medicine can do, then you close down the mind's capacity to believe anything. In fact, the only reason I was able to do it is because I asked the director of the Institute, could they speak with the head of medicine at Trafalgar Hospital, since these are already terminal people and in hospice, and no other medical treatment is being done, just opiates to keep them out of pain. Can I work with them? And they realized they had nothing to lose, but there were lots of conversations about that, and they said, do it quietly. So the intravenous vitamin drips, the ozone, all the different therapies I applied, all that was done very quietly. And no one paid attention, because when you're supposed to go someplace and die, that's exactly, then nobody looks to see the doors opening, you're coming back out again. You're going in there to die. And over a two-year period, 7 out of 10 people who were supposed to die not only got back full health and went back into their community. It only became an issue when the director of oncology found out about all this and was angry. There's a big argument that ensued between the director of oncology and the director of the hospital, and then that fed up itself up clear up to the board of trustees. And a woman who was on my side, Fanny Holzer, famous attorney, said, if he's getting results that you're not getting, put your ego in your back pocket, Buster. You know, and all of them would be dead because, Gary, they're alive. But did anyone care? The only thing they cared about was I was in their territory and they resented it. The fact I had cured patients they were not able to was indifferent, irrelevant. That's medicine today. You're rewarded for failing. You're rewarded for your effort, not the results. That's virtually 80% of all medicine today. That's why you'll never hear good information shared. It's just not going to happen. Not today, not ever, not in your lifetime. If a doctor out there cured every single patient of Alzheimer's, reversed it, every single patient of cancer, they wouldn't get a notice except they'd end up on Wikipedia's labeled a quack. In fact, the other day, it was Friday, and we were playing a special on PRN, so therefore it wasn't a live feed on BAI. And we had a person on named Ron, and Ron had end-stage COPD, lung disease, third major killer in America, third or fourth. There's heart disease, stroke, cancer, diabetes. It's in the top group. Plus, he had leukemia end stage. And instead of just going into hospice care and dying, he tried something. Well, on the last day of being there in the morning, without telling anyone what I was going to do, I invited him down to go for a walk. And there were, I think, seven or eight people decided to go for this walk. The rest didn't. And the walk was a mile and a half out, mile and a half back. And when they got back, I said, how do you feel? He said, I feel good. I said, then do it again. And each person just made a little note that I had a little table there of what miles they did. He did 30 miles. He went back this past Thursday to his primary physician who checked his lungs and could find no congestion whatsoever, sent him back out, says, something's wrong here. Your lungs are normal. I'm going to send you to an expert pulmonologist. And he's seeing that person this week, and we'll hear back. We have a person on the line right now who also went down there that day on the road, and he decided to take a walk. No one knew what they were walking to, how far. They were just walking. Let's say hello to him now. Nice to have you with us today.
Hello, Gary.
Tell people your story, please.
I was down at the retreat in April in Texas for 2 weeks. I came for 1 week, stayed for two. And I remember I came down there primarily to switch things up, get some new things going in my life, change it up. And I really tapped into an energy streak down there. We started the first day, I remember going out on the road and walking with the whole group of people. Everybody was walking. And I don't even own gym shoes because I can't run a city block without my back locking up. And I used to run track and things when I was younger, but you know, I don't do anything with my feet much anymore except maybe pedal a bike or something. And so the first day I had shin splints and I wore sandals because I had nothing else to wear. And every day we would go out and we would go out. And you were very big on telling us to self-meditate, be quiet, get into yourself, don't chit-chat with everyone around you. And that was hard to do when you're with the groups. But at the end of that second week, and I had been meditating, doing yoga on-site, on the villa, eating the wonderful gourmet vegan food, writing in my journal, sitting alone in the rose garden, just meditating, thinking, really going inward a lot. And I solved a lot of family issues I had with myself and your suggestion about getting away from negative people and situations and lectures on everything from quantum physics to quantum energy to politics to personal politics to diet and all these lifestyle things. So on the last day, you asked, who here thinks they push themselves? And I immediately raised my hand because I thought I had been working hard and I'm making a lot of connections and I wasn't going to pass up an opportunity with you leaving it open that wide saying, come on, we're going to do something. And you took us out onto the road. You identified some other people that you thought might benefit from it. And you just told us to start walking. And after a while, we separated out. There was maybe 10 of us or something like that. And Ron was one of the people. And at that point, no one was talking to anyone. We were very focused on walking that road up and back, the three-mile loop, and we just kept going. And I would see Ron, and he would see me, but we wouldn't say anything. I saw the other people. We were really into it. And I was out there just meditating on everything, the grass, the trees, the birds, the sunlight. I mean, this was a six-hour ordeal to do. I did 27 miles, and I did not set out that day to do 27 miles, but I just had an epiphany. It's like I was out there saying, this is what I should be doing for myself, and I know I'm walking on the road that's above the biggest aquifer, I don't know, in the state or something, because that's where you located the villa. Just a glorious setting, And I was laughing. I was just having so much fun. I never once thought of my physical self or any pain that I was in, because I wasn't in pain. Even at one point, my back was clicking, my lower back. And I don't know if you remember working on my back. You, like, heaved me up and bent me over and set something straight. I don't know, probably mile 18 or something like that. But we just kept going, all of us. And as Ron said last week, you know, we were all smiling at the end and congratulating one another. You brought the whole villa down to the road to cheer us on as we were coming in. There were video cameras going, still cameras going. It was a press event. It was an achievement. And I just got to meet my own energy in the 2 weeks that I was at the villa.
Now, try to do this. All the people who did that work suffered from some form of disease. I never ask anyone their state of health. That's not why they're there. I'm not there to diagnose or treat anyone. But remember that woman from Tennessee that had 100 points on her blood sugar drop in 1 week?
Yes.
Yeah. There's no medication that can do it. She did it.
She did her 27 miles, yes.
She did 27 miles. She came with high blood pressure and high blood sugar and diagnosed with diabetes and arthritis. She left with none of that. Show me the drug that can drop a blood sugar 100 points in 1 week and keep it there. It's still there. Show me the person with end-stage COPD and leukemia in the same person do 30 miles. No training. Now, I've trained for 45 years 31,000 people to do the New York City Marathon, and every single person has completed it and without injuries. And it takes a year of intense training to do it. And here are people who had not only no training, they're not 21-year-old athletes. These are all people who are sick, and they all did it. Now, try to explain that to a science-based medicine person or a journalist and see what the response is. They're not going to believe it.
And I was watching Ron. He's on the opposite side of the street doing his next lap, and I'm inspired by him. I'm saying, look at this guy go. Afterward, he comes up to me and he says, you were an inspiration to me. You kept me going. So we had this symbiosis going, all the people supporting one another without saying a word as we're grooving in our groove up and down the road. It was just incredible.
How about the young woman with advanced multiple sclerosis?
She was there, too.
She did it. 26
yes,
miles.
Well,
now, go tell her neurologist. Yeah.
Even Sal was out on the road.
Yes.
He wasn't doing the marathon, but he was out there working it. Stage 4 lung cancer. He was a month past his death date, and he's out there on the road with us. This was in the middle of the week, not that final day. And I'm going, go. And he was so charged up by our response to him, because everybody was on his side the whole 2 weeks, you know. He was so charged up by that, he left the villa just, you know, ready to take on the next thing.
Well, this is the power of energy. This is in a dimension of understanding the life cycle that orthodox science and medicine has refused to acknowledge, actually condemns. In fact, our newest article that we're writing this week, which I'm going to present next a week from today, is challenging Wikipedia and this science-based medicine skeptics with how they do not understand the essence of life and all the energies, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, herbal medicine, homeopathic medicine, energy healing, hands-on healing. They don't understand any of that because it's not in their curriculum. They're limited in their curriculum. So every single thing that is presented to them, they can only treat it, understand it, diagnose it, or follow it based upon what they're told the guidelines are. So when you're suddenly listening to trees communicate and you're silencing the mind, then you're opening yourself to energies far beyond what we've been restricted to participating in. So it's all about the energy transfer.
And I came back from the villa, and I had a blood test, so a couple of weeks after, and my cholesterol dropped 30 points. my good cholesterol went up, and the triglycerides also plunged. So I
good for you.
Use that to that real focus that I continue today to use.
Good. That's what we like to hear.
I went out and bought some running shoes, some walking shoes, so I'm ready to keep doing it.
Well, just imagine telling someone, a marathoner, you did a marathon without training, where you had health problems, and you didn't even have running shoes. And hiking boots. You had hiking boots on. Yeah, nothing like experiencing that. Thank you very much. I appreciate your calling in.
Thank you.
Okay, you've heard from two people, and we have photographs of them on the race course, not the race course, but on the little loop on this old country road. And then at the end, when I gave them my own championship world game medals, because I figured what they did today is far more difficult than what I did, because I'm a trained athlete. I always keep in shape. What they did, a lot of people will be saying that's not possible, and they're absolutely right. It's not possible. Then again, Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, and everyone said it wasn't possible. So you see, we're always going to be rewarded for being right. But what if you say something can't be done, you're right, you're not going to like your reward. You're limited. You're stuck. But when you say something can be done because you're not willing to play by everyone else's rules and free yourself, you're also right. Just imagine the doors that open in life to you at that point. Broaden your perspective, broaden your experience, broaden your mind. Luann Panessi just called in. Last call, Luann, before we end our show, your turn.
Well, Gary, I can tell you that witnessing this was amazing, and it brought back memories for me, because when I went to your retreat, you actually challenged me to do the actual New York City Marathon, and I had zero training, and I had been at your retreat, and it was after the retreat, and I showed up. And, of course, I didn't tell anybody in my family. I didn't tell any of my friends or colleagues, because I knew. You told me. They were going to tell you, don't do it. You're going to be hurt. And I just went out there and showed up, and I did it. And when I crossed that finish line, I felt every fiber of fear leaving my body, and I realized that I could accomplish anything if I believed I could do it. And that's how I've lived my life since then. And that was 1996. So it does make a difference, and it sticks. When you do something like that, that involves the mind and the body and your environment and your determination, your whole life can change. Or people can hold back and stay in their little concrete shell and be a victim. There's always choices. That was one of the most important things that I learned from retreat. So happy to hear Gary and Ron and everybody who was there talk about their amazing accomplishments.
Thank you, Luann. We're out of time, everyone. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.